Thank you very much, Alec. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Alec, you are addressing me in borrowed robes. I'm just an ordinary guy from the ghetto. I see they've got a slide here that says Afro Energy SA Gas. I just want to make a correction. That Don Mube is actually the founder and the executive chairman of that company. So, I'm going to start by telling you a story. And the reason why I want to tell you a story is because I've been sitting here and I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot today. I've not been to a conference, I think, for 20 or 30 years. I've been avoiding conferences because I thought to myself, there's so many of them that come in Gauteng, but these are talk shops, and people talk, and they got a standing ovation, they clap hands, but nothing happens. So then I thought to myself, no. I don't want to be party to that. But let me just tell you a story. I want to tell you a story because I suddenly realized when I was sitting here that most of the people who are here don't actually know about gas, but they know about minerals. They know about gold, diamonds, and coal. And I worked in Anglo-American for 22 years, and I worked with a guy called Graham William Bowstreet, and we're building power stations. And most of the people know about that, but they don't know about hydrocarbons. And I suddenly realized when I was sitting here that in fact what I'm going to talk about, I had a new word today that I've never heard, that in fact I'm going to talk about the Lulapalooza. This is the Lulapalooza I'm going to be talking about. So, in order for me now to be able to do that quickly, what I want to do, I want just to talk about what I've written here so that I can sit down, we can have a dialogue, and out of that dialogue, maybe we are going to have what the guys call sufficient consensus as to forward, kovadis, where to from here, Mzansi. Let's now do that. Alec, thank you very much, my brother, for inviting me. And when you phoned me in June and you asked me whether I'm available to come and talk about the gas opportunities for South Africans, I accepted. But I accepted because it was you, because we're together in Indaba, and your good wife, Janet. And it brought those good memories. So I'm a bit hurt because Janet started asking me about somebody else, Jennifer, my wife, Pastor. So then I accepted. I accepted, my brother, because I thought to come to this conference is an opportunity, it's an honor, it's a blessing. But more importantly, then I started thinking to myself, most of the people here actually don't even know about Afro Energy. And this is an opportunity for me to come to talk to potential investors and tell them about our nascent, infant, gas exploration project. In my presentation, I'm going to talk about the hurdles and the risks and the path that my colleagues and I traversed to discover natural gas in South Africa. Therefore, my focus is going to be about actual performance, about a track record of performance. It's not going to be about empty promises. It's not going to be about a pie in the sky. It's going to be about something that, in fact, has actually happened. So you can touch it and see it. South Africa is endowed with a prolific supply of mineral resources. Gold, diamonds, coal, manganese, nickel, and so forth. It can go on and on. But not hydrocarbons such as oil and gas. Consequently, when you talk about the discovery of gas, people are puzzled why such a deposit is only discovered in 2011. Even more perplexing, why is it discovered by somebody who is associated with a native boy like me, who comes from, was born and bred in Alexander Township, which is a squalid ghetto. People get not only puzzled, they get perplexed. It's mind-boggling. How is this possible? Well, fortunately for me, in 2005, a guy called Norman Lowenthal, who was a renowned businessman, I think at one stage he must have been actually the chairman of the JSE, invited me to his office and introduced me to two Americans. The one American guy was Brian Hughes, who was a petroleum engineer, and the other guy was Paul Trump, who is a petroleum geologist. In fact, he is still here. He just flew back last week, and I'll be meeting him tomorrow. Well, around 2005, when I was invited, I was introduced to these two gentlemen. The Americans wanted to know something that was, to them, an enigma, a conundrum. They wanted to know, what is this thing called triple PEE? All right, and then Norman said, well, there's a guy that I know in Anglo who may be helpful in this and who may cast some light on this thing called black economic empowerment. So I then went, and the Americans then said, listen, there is a potential gas resource here, which is in Mpumalanga. Interestingly, Alec, it is in fact one of the biggest deposits where there is a coal seam that's deeper and thicker is Newcastle, Alex, where you were born or grew up, but I'm not sure that you are aware when you're a young guy that underneath your feet there was a huge deposit of gas, which has got the potential of being a global deposit. I didn't know myself, Alex. So I said to these gentlemen, these American guys, sorry guys, I don't actually know what you're talking about. Yes, I've been with Anglo. In fact, I was with Anglo for 22 years. And then they then said, okay, Don, what we're going to do is that we're going to invite you to come to the U.S. And they invited me to go to the U.S. and in order to educate me. And they took me to a place called the Powder River Basin. And I then went in there. And the Powder River Basin, I think, is the third biggest gas deposit, CBM, natural gas. And I saw 33,000, if I remember the time, natural gas wells with an extensive network of pipelines, like a spaghetti jungle, you know, which go across to Canada, New Mexico, New England to distribute, to deliver the product to customers and users. So they took me there and they took me around and I looked at this and I was overwhelmed. So I came back home. When I came back home, Brian and Paul Trump, they helped me and then I established a company called Badimo Gas. The word Badimo Gas is a Sotho name, means the gods, Amalus. And the purpose of creating that name is that when I put up an application in front of a bureaucrat, I wanted the bureaucrats to understand that this is a company from Mzansi. There is a native that is involved in this. So don't touch it. Don't mess around with it. That was the idea. So then we created Badimo, and then Badimo then applied for the mineral rights. But importantly, I must just say that Paul was actually a lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe, and he believed that there are natural gas deposits in South Africa which are trapped in the dolerites, which are trapped in the intrusion, in the sandstone formations, which are interbedded with coal sediments. He believes that there is such a thing in what is called Mpumalanga. And then, of course, we then applied for petroleum rights, and we go to Cape Town because we go to a regulator called the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, PASA for short. So then we went there, and then we submitted our application, and then they will take the application, analyze it, examine it, and then send it to the DMRE, the Department of Mineral Resources in Pretoria, who will then look at it, and then they will decide whether, in fact, they grant us the petroleum rights. I won't go into a long story, because, in fact, when I did this, there was, in fact, nobody knew where to take the application. In fact, the government said to me, take this application to Eskom. I said, no, but Eskom are managing the grid. Well, take it to Exxaro. No, but I can't take it to Exxaro. Those are coal guys. Well, take it to Emgo Coal. I said, there's nothing. They didn't know actually where, to whom should I actually submit the application for natural gas. And then I met Phumzile, who at the time was a Minister of Mineral Resources, and she said to me, Don, there's an organization in Cape Town called SUCO. We don't actually know what they do, but we suspect they do something like this. Go and see them and tell them that I have sent you. Now, fortunately for me, I was also the chairman of the Atomic Energy Corporation. I didn't apply for the job. I was just taken there and deployed. I was not cadre. I was deployed. So I then went there. And then I then went, and then I went, then I went to PASA. And PASA then said, you need to go to geoscience. I went to geoscience. They said, there's so many people who have applied for these things, coal and boreholes. And they said, well, they're scared because there is something that comes out of in Mpumalanga in the air, and they then run away because this thing seems like suffocating them. It was actually coal bed methane. So then I applied and I made an application. And then we're issued with 4 licenses. The licenses that were issued were in fact close to the Majuba power stations. And they were close to a dedicated pipeline. These were the licenses. They were all in Amersfoort. And I then said, can we consolidate these licenses so that we have, instead of 4, we should actually, sorry, I'm not doing well with this thing. Instead of 4, we should in fact be having 2 licenses. So we consolidated the 4 licenses into 2. And then we had an exploration right, which was in Amersfoort, called ER56, and another exploration right, which was in Volksras, called ER38. So we consolidated that, and we ended up with 4 licenses. So we then decided, well, now we've got this, there's a reason for this that you must understand, is that these areas, we actually were educating PASA that, in fact, gas is contiguous. So therefore, it is spreading. Incidentally, I'm just cutting a long story short because of time. I had already started from Messina, where I met, in fact, the people in Messina, and I met the guys who came from De Beers, and I had already had applications there. I had applications in the Free State, which became Remagen. But at the time, it was called Mulopo. Before it was Renegen, I was there already, and I was a shareholder there, before Renegen. And I came down into Mpumalanga, I then went further south into Multino, I then went to Mpumalanga. Because in Mpumalanga, one of the things that we realized is that the farmers, when they were looking for water, and companies that were looking for coal, they were always digging and drilling something, and then there was actually gas that was being emitted into the atmosphere. So we now knew that where there is, in fact, coal, there is, in fact, coal bed methane. Coal bed methane, CH4, comes, in fact, from the coal that is being deposited, that is being in the ground. So in 2011, in 2010, in fact, He said, while I was sitting in my office in Houghton, two guys walked into my office. They said they're from Australia, and they came to PASA, and they saw an advert, and they saw the applications that were made by Padimo, and they said, but hold on, this is quite interesting, and they then wanted to put money into Padimo, which is the company that had made the applications. I then said, gentlemen, I don't want you to put your money into Padimo because I don't want to dilute. But what I want you to do is, can we take your money and put it into the ground? They then agreed. And then in 2011, Padimo entered into a farm-out agreement with Kinetico Energy, which is an Australian company that is listed on the ASX. In terms of which, Padimo then reduced its 100% shareholding in ER56 in Amersfoort and in ER38 in Forsas. And I said, guys, but the control of the company remains on this ground. The 51% will remain here. But we prepared them to say, let's dilute, and the Australians then took 49% of the rights. In 2013, I then said, guys, we then started with an unincorporated JV, and in 2013, I said, no, we need to move away from this unincorporated JV. We need to establish a company that is corporated, and then we establish Afro Energy, which was an incorporated company. In 2020, then we started 2010, 2011, we then found some gas, but we needed money. We didn't have money. And most of the South Africans, in fact, who I knew very well from Real Africa and Nail, which I was involved in starting, said to me, Don, we don't know what you're talking about. What is this thing called gas? Anyway, we started drilling some operations. And then we started finding, we started doing coring. We take a core and we put some soap. And when you core, you get water. At 50 meters in the bowels of the earth, we get water. We took the water to the lab and we find that this is sodium chloride, which is salt. Am I right? Yeah, salt. The other problem, of course, is that we didn't have the laboratories here in order to test the gas, so then we take the cores and then we send them to Denver, Colorado. And then we got an independent evaluators who are recognized, who then came back to us and said, guys, in fact, you found a hybrid. And we said, what do you mean by a hybrid? They said, you were looking for coal-bed methane, which is deep in the bowels of the earth, but before you could reach the coal seam, you found natural gas, which is conventional gas, before you got unconventional gas, which is CBM. I didn't even know that. And I was not even told by these guys from Denver, Colorado. I said, well, thank you very much. So by 2013, then we started to drill. Then we did coring, we do permeability, and then we do geophysical wiring. Well, the wireline logging. By 2013, we had about 23 core holes and we had about 9 permeability test wells. But bear in mind, when we do this drilling, we're doing this without any fracking. We are not blasting. We're not putting chemicals. We're not blasting Mother Earth. No, it's like actually when in your garden you're looking for water. There was no flaring. And of course, one of the problems in South Africa is that when you start talk about gas, people don't start thinking that you're going to blast, you're going to fracture. We don't actually fracture because we found gas in shallow deposits that are not deep. So by 2013, we had 23 core holes and 9 permeability test wells. And we did this without any type of flaring. And then when we took this to analyze this, and we then told, and I think this was Gustafson and Associates, we said that we think, Don, you've got gas in place, GIP, of 2.4 trillion cubic feet. 2.4 trillion cubic feet. We then said, well, who else has done this? And then, of course, there is somebody else who did this, and that was Mosgas. But most gas was built on less than 1 trillion cubic feet. And now we're being told here that we're sitting on 2.4. The gas deposits are found in sand. Sandstones are found in the seams, in the dolerite that trapped there. And then, of course, we then went and concentrated on Amersfoort. In Amersfoort, at one hole we drilled for 7 months, and in that hole we found something like 26 million standard cubic feet of pure methane, 7 months. Pure methane because there were no impurities in that. In fact, the guy from Arizona who was our drilling engineer, Mike Dahl, he used to call me and say, "Don, come and listen." And I said, "Mike, what's this?" He said to me, "Don, what we have found here is a big hole," and he nicknamed it the Beast. We then drilled another 500 meters. We found another hole, and I said, "Mike, what's this one?" He said, "This is the son of the Beast." And then we'll go another kilometer, 1 kilometer in Amersfoort. We drilled another hole, hole number 6. I said, "Mike, what's this?" He said, "This is Amazing Grace." I then go another 2 kilometers drilled in Amersfoort, hole number 10, which is one of my favorite holes, which was owned by a farmer who was a medical doctor, Daniel van Dijk, and I find something big. And Mike called me, said, "Don, come and listen." And I listened, and I could hear this thunder, like a jet coming. And I said, "Michael, is this the Beast?" And Mike said, "No, Don, this is Godzilla." Now, most of the holes that we drilled, virtually all the holes that we drilled, we found that there was natural gas. In 2016, this, of course, was an important discovery. And in 2016, we went and had a visitor from the mining industry. That was Sibanye Gold. And Sibanye Gold says, "Man, we are being devastated by load shedding, and we understand that this is an alternative source of energy called gas." And I then said to the CEO, I says, "Don, I don't understand this thing." And then I said, "Don, go and look for some international people to advise you." He then went to Canada, and he got what was called Vernon Deloitte of Canada, who was supported by Vernon Deloitte of South Africa to conduct an independent valuation of the Afro Energy gas resource. So he then came back to me and he says, "Donald, you know what, I'm interested in this, but unfortunately, my board doesn't want to put money into this. We want to put money into the PGMs in Australia, in America, and we're going to put money in Stillwaters." That's how Sibanye left and went to Stillwaters. He said, "I am excited by the report that I got, which is a report that came from Vernon." Sorry, I'm looking for a figure here. That came from the Vernon report, which basically said, the report said, concluded that just 51% of what was owned by Dabadimu in Afro Energy is a contingent resource player which ranges between 2.4 and 7 trillion of cubic feet gas potential, of course with varying degrees of certainty. It assessed that the development of this asset, just about 51%, we may require something like 6,500 gas wells just for the 51%, just for the 6 tenements. This may take us more than 20 years to complete this. And that was actually what came from the Vernon report. Not from me, but somebody else who's international, who's in Canada, who said this is the potential of what we think is here. Unfortunately, Sibanye did not put the money because they had to go to Stillwater. But they then said, "We will pay for the report that we got," so that, because Mia was penniless, I didn't have money. So they then paid for the report, which I then used. We then had other applications, and then we consolidated those applications. We had then had other tenements. We had tenements where we had, from ER 27, we then had 270, 270s, Newcastle, Memel, and then from 270 we're at 272, which is Secunda. And then we then discovered that in those tenements we have a lily pipeline, because the Remco pipeline from Pande to Mane goes to Sasol in Secunda. From there, it is now the Lily pipeline, which goes to Durban and Richards Bay. So we had a pipeline that was passing through our tenements. So then I went and negotiated, and I found that the people who are running the pipeline is Sasol, but the owner is Transnet. I then signed an agreement with Transnet that I'm going to be involved. In 2023, we restructured Afro Energy, and we merged our entities with Kinetico because we were looking for capital. There was no capital in South Africa, so Kinetico then came and we restructured our asset, and we ended up with Kinetico owning 100% of Afro Energy. But we then became the local shareholders. And all the guys who started with me are still there in the business. They were the skin in the game. They haven't left. What saddens me is that, in fact, most of the people who have listed in the asset are actually Australians and not South Africans. But I don't blame my brothers, because they didn't have a clue about what we're doing. I did not even myself come and speak to you. I'm coming here for the first time to come and speak to you. But there's some important things that I just want to tell you, then I'll sit down. The gas discovery in Mpumalanga and KZN in the Free State is an important game changer with a potential huge impact on the lives of South Africans. It is endowed with characteristics like a widespread deposit covering prospective areas of about 6,000 square kilometers. It's a voluminous gas resource, clean energy of about 99% methane with no hydrogen sulfide or carbon dioxide, local in a shallow deposit, and it is done without actually fracking. That's important because it is sandstones and shale. Natural gas has the potential to increase the South Africa's GDP of the country, as the same way as the discovery of gold and diamond have done. Natural gas has got that potential. However, natural gas is a basic product. It is devoid from any glamour or any glitter of gold and diamonds. Flaring gas at night in Amersfoort and in Volstras is a memorable experience. It's like as if you are in Durban or as if you are in Qatar. It will flare for you at night. The lights, then you will think they are volcanoes. Of course, the gas deposit is situated in the South Africa's belt, which is a network of infrastructure, such as the Lily Pipeline, which runs through our tenements. It is, we're close to the Eskom grid with a capacity, I think, of 49,000 megawatts. Mteta will probably correct me. That feeds into the coal mining, where we've got road networks around us, like the N2, which has got a huge traffic of diesel trucks. And of course, that is an opportunity for us to replace the diesel. This network can generate multiple streams of income. A new petroleum industry, it can help us to have clean energy, to do compressed natural gas. We can have multiple streams of income to compress natural gas, LNG, like liquefied natural gas. We can have base load and peak load, which is a substitute of dirty coal power, and implement what is called just energy transition. It has the potential to co-fire by taking gas into poor coal deposits and putting the gas, and it increases its calorific value. We can replace expensive diesel, and then, of course, we can put it into transport. We're already doing it with the taxis in Gauteng, in Soweto. We can develop new technical skills. Petroleum geologists, petroleum engineers, gas drilling operators, artisans, technicians. We can accelerate the decarbonization of South Africa. We're sitting here and listening to this threat. We are the solution. We can transform this economy. We can help. Alec, there's more that we can do.
Of this, 38 wells drilled, 100% hit rate. What's the average for exploration around the world? I understand it's about 10% if you're lucky.
Well, you know, one of the things that I want to do, it has been my style in life, is that I've always under-communicated and over-delivered. You know, when I was in Real Africa, we used to have a policy. We don't believe in our own bullshit. Sorry, Alex. This is one to speak freely, you know, if you allow me.
You can speak.
You know, so, Alex, I actually, I'm not here to say, and I know my colleagues, this is global, it's worldwide, it's this. It's that. Of course, they're basing it on the reports of independent evaluators. There are more than one of them who have done this. I just call you one only, Van Meen, Deloitte, there's Gustafson, there's Risk, there are quite a number, they're all independent, with nothing to do with me. And of course, they give me these figures. It is a gas field. It is not like Timane and Bande. Timane and Bande, you go deep to 1.5 kilometers into the barrels of the earth, and then you go, and then this one is that it's like millis. Each millis that we plant, we find gas, because it is in the dolerite. So therefore, we're talking about a gas field. And I therefore don't want here to say and promise you that, in fact, we're going to be like Shell or we're going to be like Anadarko. No, we're going just to make a contribution of finding local gas onshore. And it is for us for the next 20, 30, 50 years to find out I'll be dead by then.
But if you talk about 2.5 trillion cubic feet, just give us context of that.
Well, two other things. My colleague is also here, who's a finance guy. I think that will be probably be, they said, between 2 and 7 TCF. I think we're talking about how many billions, Rob? Yes.
Yeah, it's Greek. Just give me, Qatar's got the biggest gas field in the world. Yeah. How many TCFs is that? Into the hundreds. And this is 15, up to 15. And it's there, it is a gas field in Mpumalanga, and you can sell the gas to who? Who's going to buy?
Now remember, gas is contiguous. That's another thing which has baffled the South African government, because when each time I put an application, they say, hey, you want to recolonize the country. Because what? Remember, I started from Messina. Believe it or not, I started there. And I spread to Welkom. And then I went to Amersfoort. Then I went to Falska. Then I went to Vakkerstroom. Then I went to your country, your town, Newcastle. Thick, deep seam with huge deposits. Then I went to Memel. Last week, I went to Vrede. I went to Cornelia. I went to Standerton. Alec, it is possible that the gas that we're thinking of the Karoo has now moved millions of years and it has gone up. It's possible. But you see, Alec, I don't want to make promises. All what I'm telling you now is what I was able to find. But I still have another 20, 30, 40, 50 years to come and do drilling. But to do that, I need capital. In a country which, whenever I approach them, these are my friends. Jaco Marin, he got my guys like Teams Shabanala, who's a CEO. I trained him in Eurolink. Brown was my partner in Natal in a business I had. When I talked to them, they said, Don, on Zieti Vat Prajeno. Le Vietni Vat on Ziet. So, therefore, I'm not saying this is the challenge that is facing us. This is why we ended up now with it being owned by Kinetico, and I sit on the board of Kinetico as a non-executive director. You know, I've got a stake there. I'm a founder of this business. So I don't know how big is it going to be. But the reason why I'm saying that is because I don't want to say something and in effect it is not true. But I'm saying what I've done so far, and remember, I've not even covered 50% of what we own. I'm now told that this is the range. Not me. Now, he's saying it's possible that it go to 13 TCF. It's possible that it could be more than that. But I don't know what is it as a percentage of Qatar or as a percentage of Rovuma. All I know is that it is there, and it is local, and it is on the ground. It's not offshore. It's onshore, and it's not fracking.
I remember when Tony Twine did his analysis, the late Tony Twine at Econometrics, he was talking about the Karoo bringing 300,000 to 400,000 new jobs to South Africa. These are like mind-blowing things. It's like a whole new, it's like when I went to Davos 2 years ago and they started talking about artificial intelligence. And I came back and we bought NVIDIA and Palantir, put them in the portfolio, and they've all gone up 500%. I knew nothing about artificial intelligence, but when I started researching, my eyes got big. It's a little bit like that. It seems to be here. Where do we start researching? Where do we start understanding better what Kinetico has got, what is in the ground here in South Africa? Because if you get an MP like James Lorimer, and he's a good guy, James. He's a smart shadow minister of mineral for years, and he's always been the one making a lot of sense. When he says, this is what I own, it's my only investment because I am blown away by the potential. How do the rest of us find out about this? Give us some clues.
Well, I can tell you this. One of the things that you can do is that now, remember now, we restructured and the asset, which is here in South Africa, but we're with an investor who now has put money here, who's an Australian and is a listed entity. You can, in fact, go and Google and see some of the results that we are announcing. We just came back from the US to look at cry boxes, which are equipment for us to do LNG and compressed natural gas. Just these two. We just came back from there. Alec, I'm supposed to be playing golf with you tomorrow. And I just been told that, Chairman, you have a meeting tomorrow at Petroleum Agency of South Africa at 11 in the morning in order to put your application for production right. And a production right is a 30-year right. The production right is a 30-year production right. So that now we should be able to produce. The guy said to me, Don, you'll be gone. But at least we'd have lost an asset, which is what I've always told you, that I've always told you that it's not about quick buck. At least for me, it's about legacy. It's about not what South Africa can do for me, but what is it that I can do for it. This is what has driven me all along. That's why I avoided your conferences and the conferences there, because on Spratbyer, on the standing ovation, and nothing happens.
There's a few questions.
Sure.
Let's start with Witzer Post. Is sure. Mr. Ngwebe?
Yeah.
When will you be able to start delivering gas? Who will buy the gas and what will they do with it? And are you sure the market will still be there when you're ready to deliver?
Let me tell you something that happened practically. One of the things that we wanted to do is that we wanted to make sure that the gas that we take can be converted into power, into electricity. And therefore, we started saying we're going to have a proof of concept. And we then take the molecules of gas, we put them into a machine, which was produced by Balorand here, in Boxbeck. And we took it on site to take our gas and put it into it, and we're able to produce electrons. So therefore, we're able to produce electricity. So that's one of the things that, so we've proven that it is there. Now we have this 6,000 square kilometers that we have to do to drill. The gas is there, we've found it, we've used it, and it can produce power. But it can produce other things. It can be used as a substitute for diesel. One of the things that my farmers, my neighbor, they say to me, listen, on Hofen plant, what can you do for us? Is that I've taken some of their tractors and converted them so that they don't use diesel, but they use gas. In Soweto, the Soweto guy says, I go to Limpopo. I go to Bree Street. If you go to Bree Street, you'll find a garage there that says virtual gas with green. The guys there, we've changed the engines to be a hybrid, to be dual, where she starts with an ordinary petrol and he changes into gas. He goes to Limpopo and back without filling the tanks. I had a guy who sits here, who sat on the N2 with his wife and counting the trucks that were going there. He says, Don, I got tired. And my wife said, let's go home. It was more than 1,000, 2,000 trucks with so many tanks of diesel. That is a substitute. We can go into fertilizers. We can go into plastics. I have around me mines that are coal mines, and this is a substitute because it is cheap input cost compared to diesel.
So when have you started delivering already?
No, that's what I'm trying to show you, Alex, is that I started by finding out first and then by saying, can I use it? And now what I'm now doing, that's why I'm applying for a production right. That's why I want an investor, because now I'm moving from upstream to middle stream to downstream. But I've done a survey of who needs it. I have got a queue of people who said, Baba, come and deliver.
What about the IDC? Are they an option?
Well, so, Alec, somebody must have been telling you something. The IDC, in fact, has come to see me. And the IDC then said, listen, you know, when you talked to us some 10 years back, we didn't have a clue what you're talking about. And I brought them on site and where they actually saw the flaring. And now they're saying, Don, you know what? We were sitting at one stage with $60 billion that we did not use. In fact, it had to be taken back to treasury. We're now asking them back to bring it back because there is an asset here. And I'm now looking also at other partners, because remember the skill base, incidentally to remember, this is not local skill. This is a skill of guys that are in the U.S. right now. Tomorrow I'm meeting with Paul Tromp, who just came back from Florida to flew in so that we can go to the Petroleum Agency. So I'm now also using other partners who are now going to help me with turbines. I'm now going into the pages of getting turbines. I have no clue about turbines. Like, I don't, I must be honest. But I'm now getting other partners who are going to come to the party because they said, we have proof that the gas can be used to generate power. I can also, Tyler has left, I approached even before him, because my closest hole, 4,600 megawatts, is actually Majuba. And Majuba has been having stones and poor ash. But when you take gas and put it into that, it increases its calorific value. So now, also got Majuba, and I've also got somebody that we can do coal firing and increase the megawatts.
It's so interesting because when you're at the, what do they say, that the pioneers who always get the arrows in their back?
Yes.
When you're at that forefront of innovation, it's so difficult to break through. But once people get it, how far are you from the rest of society getting it, what this gas could mean to South Africa?
Well, you know, there's a saying that pioneers get scalped.
What happens.
But I can tell you now that gradually the South Africans are now beginning to realize. I can tell you that, for instance, there are now, I just had a capital raising that I did, finished in August, first week of August. It was oversubscribed. But I now realize that my South African colleagues, that's one of the reasons why I came here. In fact, you have no idea. Lorimar bought it because I think he went into a conference in London where Kinetico was making the presentation. It is the first time that Don Wube is here to talk, to demand say iso. I'm just saying, on set, it's iso.
Alle wird nie wat uns wird.
Alle wird nie wat uns wird.
Flaring, James says, flaring is a large environmental concern. Are you aware of the success in Bitcoin mining operations of reducing emissions from flaring while contributing significantly to an alternative rep? Chance. Bitcoin, I mean, hello. No, do you know anything about this?
Well, if you, one of the problems that is facing mining companies is that when they mine, remember, Kinross, 2007, 13 or 14 people died. They were not killed by rock. They were killed by coalbed methane, which is 27 times more lethal than carbon dioxide. So one of the things that we do is actually we're going to the mining industries like Anglo, New Denmark, which are huge deposits of coal. In fact, they now move away from it, and we then come in and help them in order to create safety for them. And therefore, we do help them because it is, in fact, dangerous, and you need professionals there.
I get it. I remember the Kinross mining disaster. So if I understand you correctly, they will be able to remine there once you extract the gas.
Absolutely. Okay. And I can take the same gas and use it as a substitute for the power, which is the diesel that they are importing.
It's a heck of a story. Marius van Straten wants to know, how does one get investment exposure to this gas resource?
Well, as I told you, that the company is a listed company, a Kinetico company. One of my colleagues, which is James McMillan, who runs Independent Securities, is here. I can give you the contacts. You can phone James, and then James can then link you up. You know, in the same way that we went to the Reserve Bank and said, this is what we want to do. And we went to SARS and they said, we love the story.
Why don't you list it on the JSE? And I'll tell you why. It's in the BizNews portfolio, in our web trader portfolio, because we have to, you have to buy it in Australia. And it's hard to get. There's not many shares available. Why not list on the JSE?
Robert, I think you should answer that question.
People are having to do gas, but then the two miles, this cannon, there's a strike. South Africa is a mineral resource that you try and list a company in South Africa, there's no interest at that stage. So it's taking you to raise capital.
Okay. I'm going to pick that up on the video, I'm afraid. So I'm just going to paraphrase you quickly. It's because the gas market, the people who are knowledgeable about it, are in Australia and Canada. South Africa is no interest. And as a consequence, at this point, as a consequence, you were listed in Australia. But if there were interest here at home, would you be able to have a secondary listing and maybe open it? Because you look at this, it's very hard to buy your shares via web trading.
No. I hear you, Alec. But in fact, I'll go further than Rob. At one stage, we did actually talk about actually listing here in South Africa and have a dual listing. But of course, you need first to go and make sure that you have drilled as much of those wells as possible so that you can make sure that you've got a huge deposit. Bastard is to say to me, Donald, before we open a gold mine, we need to make sure that resource is there, because the value appreciation comes from the size of your deposit. We need to do that, right? And I think down the road, we now will consider that listing. But I have to do the work so that I don't give people a false promise.
Last question from Rene Kilner. Between 40 to 70% of electricity consumption is thermal, heating or cooling. To use electricity for this is expensive. Gas via co and tri-generation solutions have proven to be the most cost-effective solutions by a long shot. Gas availability is the problem. What about pricing? Will this make a massive difference to electricity prices?
That's a good question. There is another threat that is facing us. We're faced with a gas cliff. And remember, the Remco pipeline, Sasol, is actually involved in operating the Remco pipeline. Sasol has now been warned that there won't be enough gas. Originally, it was 2006. This has now been extended to 2008. 2026, it is now to 2028. But there is a serious threat which is going to affect a huge companies especially petrochemical companies, because if we don't have an alternative clean source of energy like gas, we're going to be in serious trouble. This is the potential. However, having said that, there are other people who are swirling around us, like the Kapawa ship, who is now coming here to bring in through vessels, and of course, they're now going to bring very expensive gas. And of course, there's some issues which the Minister of Forestry Environment has now raised. But this is the alternative so that we can look at actually being competitive and having something that is local content, something that is here on Mother Earth.
Now, I know in the media business, we like to say, you heard it here first. Mark those words. Mark those words. You've seen something. You've seen something today, which you'll be looking back at in time. You say, damn it. Did I really know what had just happened? Don Lubbe, thank you.